And welcome to Tell Me Your Story. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help your dreams come true, and we provide you with new paradigms for a new world, looking for those new ways of living every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., and we stream live at those times, if you want to call it that, on the website of richarddugan.com. The link is right there on the right-hand side of the page. My picture with my hat and all of that good stuff is there for you to listen to, go into at 7 or a.m. or p.m. on Sundays or 1 a.m. Monday mornings. You can also listen to the podcasts at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. You can also listen to the podcasts on SoundCloud and iTunes. And in some cases, maybe most cases, you can also listen to the interviews on our guests' websites, because we send them the interview and then they can post it, and we will then make that link available to you as well as far as their website, so that you can continue to do some research and investigating and so forth. Today's program, I'm really wanting to try to keep as upbeat as possible. It doesn't have to be a sad thing, but I'll be honest with you, there were two songs that came to mind to sort of epitomize what we're going to talk about today. And I only chose this one because it kind of sets the tone initially. But I will say that it certainly doesn't fit my parents. They're in their mid-late 80s. My dad just turned 87. My mother will be 84 on September 17th. And they're just doing their own thing. They're having a great time. My dad told me the other day, he says, "Hey, you know, doing great. We're still going to the gym and doing our thing." To which I said, "So are we going to see you on America's Got Talent anytime soon?" He said, "No, you're not going to see that." Anyway, I'm just going to play you one verse of this particular song, and then we're going to get into our conversation with our very special guest here on the program.
The old folks don't talk much. They talk so slowly when they do. They are rich, they are poor. Their illusions are gone. They share one heart for two. Their homes all smell of time, of old photographs, and an old-fashioned song. Though you may live in town, you live so far away when you've lived too long. Have they laughed too much? Do their dry voices crack? Talking of things gone by, have they cried too much? A tear or two still always seems to cloud the eye. They tremble as they watch the old silver clock. When day is through, tick-tock so slow. It says yes, it says no, it says I wait for you.
And of course, that sort of epitomizes the life of some folks who are in their retirement years, and unfortunately, they don't have a family around them, and it's really kind of, it is kind of depressing. But there are also folks who are just jumping around, even into their 90s, or even following their centenarian year, I guess that's right, their 100th birthday. And we're here to talk about that, because the population of older folks, I actually came up with a phrase, and this is to my guest, to my very special guest, who is going to join us to talk about this. And I guess you might say gerontological therapy. I don't know if that's a correct word or not. Linda Schrager, thank you so much for joining us here on the program today.
Well, it's great to be with you, Richard.
I have to say that in spite of the fact that I'm getting older every day, and of course, aren't we all, inside I feel like I'm 17, but I have to remind my 17-year-old, look, the body that you're in doesn't do the things that it did at 17, so you need to just take it easy, or you're going to hurt me. As I said, my folks they're doing great. You know, they're having a grand old time, as it were. They have children, six, of which I'm one. They have one, two, three grandchildren, and they have two great-grandchildren. And from time to time, my parents do care for the grandchildren, although I have, and I've been around when they've been caring for them, and boy, they just look haggard. Just worn. And I told my dad once when I was visiting, I said, "Dad, you know you can say no." And he said, "I know that, but it's not my, it's your mother. She wants to." And I mean, mom with the maternal instincts and all of that stuff, she wants to take care of the kids, whether it's children, grandchildren, or great-grandchildren. But it's maybe her 17-year-old hasn't quite gotten the message yet that you need to take it easy. But one of the things that I have talked with my parents about is one of the things you and I are going to talk about, and that is the talk. And no, folks, we're not talking about the birds and the bees here. We're talking about, mom, dad, what are you going to do as you get older and this and that and the other thing? And I will tell you that my parents, and I had this with them maybe 20 years ago. And I said, and actually they shared this with us over the course of time as we were growing up too. It said, "You kids are not, you're not going to take care of us, and you're not going to have to. We've already put everything in place."
That's fantastic. And very rare, by the way.
I was just going to say, and very rare. So the non-rare situation is, Lydia?
The non-rare situation is that mom and dad are getting older, but they're going about their life, and they're feeling pretty good, like you're describing your parents. And so they start to get used to the little aches and pains and things that maybe slow them down. For example, getting up and down the stairs in the house, their knees creak a little bit, but they say, "Okay, I'll just take it a little slower." Or even getting on and off the toilet. It seems like that toilet got low all of a sudden. But after many, many times of doing it, they just adapt. So everybody's going along fine, and the kids are out and about doing their life, and many times don't even live near mom and dad. And then all of a sudden, the crisis occurs. The fall happens. The heart attack happens. The stroke, the need for the hip replacement. And then all hell breaks loose, because nobody really did talk about what will we do if dad is in the hospital and can't, you know, manage the lawn or the shoveling of the snow, or mom all of a sudden starts to be forgetful and we're worried about her being safe near the stove. And we don't have any plan in place. And they have this big house, and it's kind of cluttered, and they can't get around, and we never had the conversation. So this book, Age in Place, the main message of it all, excuse me, is that the important thing to do is have that conversation with mom and dad while all is good, while there's no crisis occurring, when you're all sitting around at Thanksgiving dinner and everybody's happy and healthy. And then you have this conversation that talks about, it starts out with, most importantly, mom and dad, what do you want? What is your goal for the future? How do you see yourself 10 years from now, or 20, depending on obviously the age they are when you're having the conversation? But what do you want? What are your hopes for where you'll be living? What are your hopes for health issues and going into, you know, last wishes and medical wishes and that type of thing? All of those things are an important talk to have. What's the money situation? If you guys do have a need for assisted living or a nursing home, have you made any plans for that? And these are kind of uncomfortable conversations, and so what happens is we don't have them, and we just let it go. Or very often mom and dad try to avoid it, and they say, don't worry, we're fine, don't worry about it. But the key is to really kind of force that issue and force that conversation. But the good news, as far as where I'm coming from, and there's many aspects of this, but my book and my what I teach people about is aging in place and how to stay in your own home. So the conversation that I'm really having you focus on is, Mom and Dad, how can we help you to stay here? So the good news is that's pretty positive. It's not like we're talking about, you know, we have to consider maybe a different level of care, or we have to consider, you know, maybe having you move to a different house because you can't stay in this anymore. My book goes through and tries to help people to stay in their own home, so that's a happy thing. And the idea is that you want to go to your parents' house and really gather data before you have this conversation. So it's not like you're going to call up from, you know, afar and say, okay, guys, we're worried about you, you know, this is what we're going to do. But instead, it's very important for the kids to go to their parents' home and watch them literally navigate around the house, from getting out of the car, in the driveway, in the front or back door, and then walking through the house, room to room. How do they get on and off the couch? How do they get in and out of doorways? How do they get into the bathroom? How do they manage in the kitchen? And that walkthrough goes on and on and on, and you're gathering your data. And I call it get your inner Sherlock Holmes on. You really got to watch them do their thing. And it's not a one-time thing. You can't learn all of this in one visit because people are different on different days. So it's helpful, and like you said, you have many siblings, for everybody to go at different times and get a feel for how they're managing in their home. And when all that data is gathered, that's when you sit down and you have the conversation.
And for some, it's a tough one to have because they've always taken care of you. If you're, you know, you're the sibling, you're the child, rather, and you know, they've always taken care of you, and they've never depended upon you to care for them. And it's sort of it can be a very awkward situation for some folks because of that particular, because of the child-parent relationship. That it's almost as though you're reversing it.
Well, you know, when you read a lot of things these days about caring for your parents, a lot of people will talk about parenting your parents, exactly what you just said, that it's sort of a reversal that occurs. But in my opinion, I feel like it's important to remember that really that reversal doesn't have to occur. They are our parents, and we need to always treat them as such, no matter what. They deserve the respect that they are our parents, and we are going to treat them that way. And that's what happens, is that the parent starts getting that feeling that the kid is trying to tell them what to do. You know, I'm not there yet, but I'm starting to get that with my adult children now, when they sort of roll their eyes at me and tell me, you know, maybe I'm not doing it the right way, or I'm not as tech savvy as they are, and I'm not sure that, and I know that is true, actually. So, you know, they're starting to get that little feeling that maybe they're parenting me every once in a while. But the bottom line is, when that happens, I get upset, and you know, you feel bad about that, and you sort of get defensive. But what works is not doing it that way and not trying to make your parents feel infantile or that you're telling them what to do. But instead, what you're doing is you're meeting them in the middle, and you sort of take on the feelings of yourself. It's not that you're going to say, Mom, you're not safe. You're toddling around the house. You're about to fall. You know, I can see that Dad is not doing well. No, 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 and this is what we're going to do. Instead, you say, you come at it from your own feelings. Mom and Dad, we love you so much, and we respect you and how far that you've gotten, and you've raised all of us, and you're in your 80s, and you're still in this home, and it's so important to you. How can we meet in the middle? How can we all agree that we're going to figure out a way to help you modify this house if need be, do some changes, do some lifestyle changes, so that we can keep you here where you want to be? And that's really the kind of the attitude that I have found works best with people.
And if you've just joined us, we are talking with the author of Age in Place, A Guide to Modifying, Organizing, and Decluttering Mom and Dad's Home. I think I need that book, Linda, for me. Forget
exactly.
Mom and Dad. I need
right.
this for me.
It doesn't have to be for Mom and Dad. It can be. We should all start right this very second.
That's right. Everybody drop everything you're doing to keep the radio on. Keep the radio on.
Right. Well, it's good background talk for doing it anyway.
we're going to encourage you to declutter your
Exactly.
But, you know, it's interesting, too, as I have had the privilege of getting to know my parents as I have grown into adulthood, they're not parents anymore. They're more like friends, good friends, which is really, I'll be honest with you, it's very nice to be able to say, because I know that there are a lot of families. I've known some people in my life, my age, as I was growing up, didn't have great relationships with their parents. So this particular talk that we are discussing, it's going to be a really hard one to have. I didn't necessarily have, and I've said this many times on this program, didn't necessarily have the Norman Rockwell kind of life. We didn't have the dysfunctional holiday dinners, you know, where we were throwing barbs or food at one another. We worked through our differences. We knew that each one of us was an individual. We may or may not have liked where the other one was going, but what are you going to do? You got to let them do their thing. And we've got to make our own mistakes. And one of the things that my parents told me very early on, especially having gone through my first marriage and now I'm in my second, and I used to ask them, well, why didn't you guys step up and say something? And they said, because it wasn't our place. Yes, we're your parents, but it's your life. And if you come to us, and I did on occasions during my first marriage, I'd come to them with questions and they would answer them honestly. But they weren't going to interfere in that respect. They had the prime directive of non-interference with other life forms. But now the tables are kind of turned. But you've put it in a very, very positive way to how to approach mom and dad. But what if it isn't the children? What if what if maybe the couple or even an individual? Who is in that stage of life, and it's their friends. Are you now approaching it from a different perspective or still the same, shall we say, the same angle in that regard to try to encourage them to see what you're seeing and that you really care and you don't want to lose them as a friend and that kind of stuff? Is it the same, or is there another tack that a close friend or neighbor should take because they care about the people in the neighborhood?
No, I think that it all works pretty much the same. You know, it's funny. I'm in this field, and I've written this book, and I have my own friends who are starting to downsize now. They're choosing. A lot of them are looking for a house in Florida or in California in warmer climate. And, you know, they'll ask me and I'll say to them, you know, you have got to consider a house that will sort of grow old with you. And it's funny that people even in the 60s, in their 60s and 70s, don't often think that way. So I find myself now encouraging my friends and, you know, saying them that to them that really, you know, it's the beach house with the four-story staircases to go up so that you can see is not going to do you well in another, you know, 10 years. So I think that whether it's a friend, a neighbor, or anyone, it's important to, if you see that they might be sort of going down the wrong path, in your opinion, or going down a path that might not bode well in the future, certainly it's helpful to speak up and to give them some information. For example, as I said, I have friends who are starting to look for the retirement home, and I'll say, consider universal design, which is, that refers to products and spaces that can be used by a wide range of people. So a lot of the older homes don't have that, and there's a concept called visitability. And visitability is when anybody, you live in a home that anyone could actually come to at any time and stay with you and get into the house. So what that means is you would want to have a zero-step entrance or as close to that as possible, so that literally getting from outside in is not a hard thing to do. And then you want interior doorways that are wide enough. You want them to be about 32 inches wide if possible. You want a bathroom on the main floor. Now, many times, and especially in the older homes, there's usually a bathroom, but it's usually a guest bathroom or a powder room. It doesn't have a shower. So to be able to have a full shower or bath tub on the first floor is fantastic. So those are the things that one wants to look for. You want to have kitchen with various height counters and workspaces. I have a woman now that I work with who has MS, and she has the most amazing kitchen, and she's in a wheelchair, and she can go in. The husband's tall. She's in the chair, and they can press a button, and the counter's lower to her wheelchair height so that she can cut up the salad and clean the dishes and do whatever meal prep she wants to do.
Sounds like they live in a house that used to be a dentist office with those chairs that raise and lower.
Exactly. A lever-style doorknob.
Oh, yeah,
You know, now, that is the universal doorknob that everyone can do. I can get out of my car with a handful of packages, not have any use of my hands, go up to my door in my garage into my kitchen, and use my elbow to press it to go in the house.
Yeah.
Those doors work so well that I actually have a video on my website of my golden doodle dog opening the bathroom door. We have never been able to go to the bathroom privately since we got this dog because she wants to be with us, and she can jump up and with her paw press the lever door and open it. So if the dog can do it, anybody can do it.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you want to look for an attached garage if possible, railings. You know, there's always a couple of steps leading from the garage into the house, a good railing there. Laundry on the main floor. I live in the upstate New York area, and we have a lot of old homes here, and I have to tell you, the bane of everybody's existence is the laundries in the basement.
Yep.
And, you know, they're going downstairs because, of course, they're determined to do the laundry, and that's a problem here. That's a big area for falls, is going down those basement stairs.
Linda Schrader is my guest, and we're talking about just some incredible stuff. OtherwiseHealthy.com is her website, and the book that we're also featuring, if you will, is entitled Age in Place. That's what we're discussing here, A Guide to Modifying, Organizing, and Decluttering Mom and Dad's Home. My folks moved into a condo from the home I was born and raised in. And it's all single level and so forth. And there's I think there is one step up into the place. So it's nothing horrendous. But it's something that people need to keep in mind. I think these are good things. And for those of us who don't need them, it actually makes our lives kind of nice too. So that's something to consider. We're going to take a short break here, Linda. And I want to thank you so much for being with us and staying with us through the break, because we want to talk more about this, because there's more to discuss, there's more to talk about, especially from the context of this whole aspect of, you've already talked about the modifications, but then we're talking about organization as well as decluttering, and we'll get into that as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Please stay with us.
Tell me your stories.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. I'm here with the author of the book, Age in Place, A Guide to Modify, Organize, and Declutter Mom and Dad's Home. We're going to talk about that as well. Linda G. Schrager, she is an occupational therapist, social worker, certified aging in place specialist, the organized caregiver. You know, I want to share with you very quickly, folks, that before we jump back into our conversation here with Linda, that I have been celebrating my 11th year doing this radio program, and I am really excited about continuing to do so, and there is no reason for it to ever stop. I have no plans on doing that, and so I'm excited about that. And if you are excited about what we do on this program, sharing with you new ideas, new concepts, and helping you make it through your life, whether it's dealing with the issues of aging, whether we're dealing with those wonderful metaphysical and spiritual subjects as well, and you'd like to support what we're doing, we're not a nonprofit, but I can always use all the help that I can get in more ways than one sometimes. We have on our missions page a link to help you to support what we're doing at the bottom. Go straight to PayPal. Read the mission statement and what we're doing. Listen to some of the interviews. And if you like what you hear and you'd like to help us out, we are more than grateful and appreciative to you. So it's richarddugan.com/mission. And, you know, I will be eternally grateful to you for your support in all of that. I am eternally grateful to Linda Schrager for her support in this program talking about aging and age in place. And I made the joke during the break. I said, I'm already doing that. I need a book to do this that I'm already doing. From the day I was born, I was aging. But it was at a different level then and a different level of care. Although, Linda, would you say that the care that a person in their, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s, and this is just a general phrase, because, again, I know a lot of folks who are in their 70s, 80s, and 90s who are just, I mean, they're jumping out of airplanes, for God's sakes. They're,
exactly.
They're hang gliding. They're hiking. They're free climbing up the face of I don't know what. But then there are those who they're almost back into their childhood, specifically from a physical standpoint, and it's almost as if they're just worn out. You know, and they're back to that childlike, please, I need you to help me through this. But their pride is getting in the way. You know, I don't want your charity. You know, I can do this myself. And I was sharing with you before we started this during the break, I was sharing with you how I used to be able to do the lawn work and I still can. I mean, it's not that I can't, but wouldn't it be nicer to hire somebody to come out there and do it? Saves me the aches and pains and the stress. The job still gets done. I can supervise if I want. And it's not, you know, it'll cost me a few dollars. Okay. But it's not going to cost me my mobility on a short-term basis.
Exactly. And sometimes, you know, asking for help is a very important thing. And that's part of this. The first half of my book, I literally go through room to room and talk about modifications. But the second half of the book is where I talk about creating a caregiver team. And this is a hard thing to go alone. It truly is. And you need a team of people around you, whether that's the kids, which certainly you want to hope are on the team and the leaders of the team. But there are a lot of people that can be helpful. And like you just said, if you look at the tasks that you need to do through the day, and one of them is lawn work that could be, you know, potentially physically harmful, and you can give that to someone else, what a great idea. Because you're saving your muscles, your physical health is being saved for more important things, and you're freeing up some time, and you're allowing yourself to just feel better and not have to do that task that really is taking a lot out of you. So, yes, by all means, if someone can afford to sort of dole out some of the responsibilities, that's really the way to go.
Yeah.
And that's, I talk about that when I'm talking about organizing the team. I literally say, look at the tasks that somebody has to do throughout the day. And let's say go to the grocery store, manage the medications, clean the house, get the mail, all of those things. And we list them. And then on the other side of the page, I just tell people, now write down who can do those things. So sometimes when we get a caregiver and they become so overwhelmed if they're trying to do it on their own, it is an overwhelming thing. But if you can list those things that mom and dad need and then figure out who can do them, it becomes much easier. So, for example, you have the kids, and you say you have six siblings, but, you know, the odds are that everybody doesn't live close. Some of them live far away. And sometimes I'll see when I'm working with a family that the far away ones are kind of getting away with it a little bit. You know, the close ones are the ones taking on the burden, and the ones who live halfway across the country, well, I wish I could help, but I live halfway across the country. Well, guess what? We have the internet now. So you, son who lives across the country, why don't you take on the paying of the bills, the managing of the financials, which all can be done online. And maybe the sister, who's not around all that much, but her job can be to look at all the doctor's appointments. And let me tell you, the doctor's appointments become overwhelming because as you get older, there's more and more doctors and more ailments and more things that you have to do. So somebody can organize the doctors and the medical information. There's a part in the book literally about how to organize medical information, how to make a big notebook and keep it all together and what needs to be kept together. And a lot of that stuff can be done online these days too. So there's that whole end of it. There's, you know, maybe there's not kids local, but maybe there's nieces, nephews, grandchildren. Maybe the grandson can be the one who's in charge of mowing the lawn, which is a hard thing to do. But if one kid can come over once a week and do that, it's not so hard for him. But it can be overwhelming for dad if physically it's hard to do and he has a lot on his plate. There are tasks, we call them instrumental activities of daily living, which are getting the mail, doing the laundry, that taking the garbage out. I have so many people who they live in their home, and it's really a hardship to roll the garbage out to the street. If they have a walker, they have to sort of manipulate that, and it gets hard. So can't we find a neighbor who does it every single week themselves, who it wouldn't be a hardship to just walk across the street and grab mom's garbage and bring hers out to the street. So that's a task that really can make things a lot easier. So, you know, we look for people who can help in that way. If there's no family, and sometimes there isn't, then you have to look outside the box a little bit. So then we can look for a faith community, a church, a synagogue. Many of those actually have committees in place for seniors who are alone, who need assist. So they have people who volunteer, who will come out and do all those things, who will maybe take you for a ride to the doctor's office, pick up your medications, go to the grocery store and grab your groceries for you. So there's people like that out in the community who can help. And there's something called a geriatric care manager, which if you get to the point where you can't find people to volunteer who aren't in the community or aren't in the family, these are professionals, and their job is to help a senior to manage the day-to-day activities of aging. And they will do a lot of these things. They will take them to the grocery store. They will take them to the doctor's office. They'll go over finances with them, and they will help them get resources and services in place. So that's called a geriatric care manager, and there's always that person. And I am all for hiring private help, hiring aides to help. So many times I'll have a situation where we have the person, they're living pretty well, they're on their own, but, you know, they do have physical or cognitive problems and they need a little support. So I'll suggest have an aide come in the morning, get them up, perhaps help them in the shower because the bathroom and the shower is where a lot of falls occur. We can talk about that in a few minutes, but have that person come in, get them up, get them showered, dressed, give them breakfast, get them going on their day. And then perhaps you'll consider hiring someone to come in at night and do the same thing in the opposite way. Give them dinner, help them get washed up and ready for bed, get them safely into bed. So there are a lot of ways that this can be done. It takes, you know, I talk about in my book, a 100-year-old woman who lives near me, actually, and who I have taken care of for many years and helped her to stay in her home. But it takes a village. It's not something that you can do alone. It's very hard to do it alone. So you have to just be creative. Look through some of the ideas in this book and get a team together to help.
Yeah, but I'm hearing the voice of somebody listening going, yeah, well, Linda, that's fine, but I'm on a fixed income. I can't afford all that stuff.
Well, first of all, and yes, and that's true, and there are people. And so all of the things, but many of the things that I just mentioned to you are people who are helping who are not. The only thing that cost the money was at the end,
right.
The private aid.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, yes, then you do need to go, you know, as I said, to family, to friends. You know, another area is that to ask mom and dad, who are your friends? Who are your neighbors? Especially if your children who aren't really there 24/7, who don't, you know, live near them and might not be totally aware of their social support system. So, you know, they might have their good friends who they play cards with or who they go to a movie with, who live around the block who can help. So there are many ways to get support that it does not cost money, but yes, at a certain time, then you might need to spend money, and then that's a whole other ball game to sit down and figure out what the health insurance, long-term care insurance will pay for the AIDS. Hopefully people have gotten that. There are different benefits. And then if not, the best thing to do is meet with a social worker. You can go to your local, wherever you are, area on aging. And the local area on aging will then give you information on ways to get support if it means that you might need to transition to Medicaid so that you can get more services. They will help you do that. There are home aid services in everybody's area, mm-hmm. that are for lower income people. So you just need to access that information.
And the population, or the segment of our population that we're talking about, it's growing. And I've been hearing now for probably the last 10, maybe 20 years, that this is going to be a problem for us because more people are going to be outside, you know, out of work range and into retirement age. And there aren't going to be enough people who are on this side. I'm going to assume you and I are both on this side of the retirement age. There aren't going to be enough people to care for all of these people. The baby boomers. I mean, the baby boomer generation supposedly in the last 50 years is probably the largest generation that come about.
True.
And
it is true.
So it's like you're looking at a workforce, if you will, if we can use that term, that is smaller than the force that is no longer working. And it's like, how are we gonna deal with this? That's got to be huge, a huge issue.
It is huge. The New York Times had a huge article last week on the millennials. You know, the younger people who are now in their 30s, 40s. 50s who are being called upon now to take care of their elders because there's just not enough people out there. And, you know, it's a hard situation. People who were in the, you know, right in the middle of their own career, building their career path, and they highlighted some woman who had to stop everything and move, I think it was to California or something along that line, to take care of her mother who had a stroke or something, a medical crisis occurred. So, yes, it's definitely an issue, and there are people who are studying it very, very closely to try to figure out what we're going to do because younger people every day are being called upon to care for their seniors because the people in the middle of the caregiving age are just not out there. And there's a ton of seniors, and they are aging, and it's true. We're going to have more that need to be cared for and less who can do the caring.
Yeah. Now, I have to tell you that some years ago, on this radio station that we're broadcasting on today, we used to have a program that dealt with being a caregiver. And I remember when I was assisting, I was producing the demo, and this is what they were talking about, all of this. And I'm thinking, okay, well, that's all fine, well, and good, but how are you going to turn this into a weekly show that's going to go on for, and in this case, it went on for, I think, 5 years? Well, what I didn't know about what a caregiver was and that, shall we say, that job title, what it included, could fill 5 years of programming. Because there are all different levels. Now, we're dealing with, in one sense, we're dealing with only one level of caregiving, and we won't go into the others. But if you have taken care, if you're a parent who's taken care of a sick kid, or you're a sibling who's taken care of your sick brother or sister, or even your parents or your own children, et cetera, that is caregiving.
Exactly.
That is what that is. So, or if you have pets and they're ill, or you've got to take them to the vet because they've injured themselves, whatever the case might be, beyond the normal day-to-day routine, that's caregiving. And, you know, it took me a couple programs to realize, oh, I guess you can carry this thing on for 5 years.
That's for sure. You could be still carrying it on today.
Yeah.
Because caregiving is one of the biggest aspects of any health issue and anything. And many of the big companies are trying to come up with plans to help their workers to better deal with the need for caregiving and give them time off and give them benefits and respect the fact that, you know, they might be going to work every day, but then they have an elderly mother somewhere or they have a sick child also, and, you know, they get home, and the minute they get home, then starts the caregiving job. So it's absolutely huge. It's a huge issue. Yeah.
And what I haven't been able to figure out yet, and I want to put this in its proper context, how it is that no one yet has turned this into a business that is, and this is a delicate balance here, that is both profit-making for the person going into this business, but not financially detrimental and abusive to those people who need that business. I mean, it's one thing to hire a landscaper or a lawn maintenance person, a gardener, to mow your lawn for, say, $10, or a kid in the neighborhood. That's one thing. Would you pay $100 to have them mow your little swatch of grass? I don't think so. You know, and that's one of the problems that we have, of course, in our society, in our day and age, is the fact that people do tend to take advantage, and it's not just people who don't know who these people. Sometimes it's their own children that are taking advantage of them, and that, again, that is another subject for another time. But it is certainly something that people need to be aware of, and which is why you and I, Linda, as we are, again, moving closer and closer to that period in time when we might. I don't have any kids, so I got nobody that's going to give me the talk. Okay. So
there you go.
I'm going to have to get it from
you. Call me. I'll come out to California and sit and talk with you.
Okay.
I need a little vacation. That would be great.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to extend the invitation now before we get to the end of the program, that should you ever get out here, we'd love to continue this conversation because it is an important one. Because, as I say, from the moment we're born, we're heading down that road. You know, it's inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's extremely important for us to do that. Age in Place, a guide to modify, organize, and declutter mom and dad's home. We're going to talk about the declutter part because organizing it, you kind of have gone through that a little bit as far as the kitchen and the living room. Preferably, there aren't stairs. You're not going up a flight of stairs to the second floor. Now, when I was growing up, ours was a single-level home. And when my folks moved into this condo, it's a single-level condo, and it's actually attached to several, you know, to other condos in this complex.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So they have neighbors around them, and I would think that, you know, everybody's kind of looking out for everybody else, and if you haven't seen someone for a while, you go in and check on them, or you check on them every day just to, you know, say hello and be kind and what have you. But then there are folks who live in neighborhoods where the houses are a little further apart, maybe. And, you know, you don't have quite the same connection. But I want to get into the aspect of the decluttering, because I know a big issue, a huge issue, and this isn't just with the elderly. I was going to say that one of the phrases I came up with many, many years ago when I was doing programs dealing with folks in their 60s, 70s, 80s, etc. You know, they refer to them as senior citizens.
Mm-hmm.
Throw that away. Just throw it away. They're not they're not senior citizens. They're seasoned citizens. Seasoned through time. Some could maybe use an analogy from fine wine, but I like the whole thing of gathering those seasonings. But what happens over the course of time, and you and I probably are suffering from it a little, maybe a little more than a little, and that is the fact that we start collecting stuff from a very early age that has some meaning to us, and we don't want to let it go. And now we're into those 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, living in a small house, maybe. And we've seen the television shows called Hoarders. And you got a small little path going through. And I have to tell you, I'm 58, okay? And I have another 42 years I have to live, because my great-grandmother lived to be 100, and I told everybody I was going to outlive her. So I've made a commitment. I got to keep it.
Exactly.
But I don't necessarily need to keep everything. Are you ready for this one?
Yep.
I still have the yearbook from my eighth grade class in a file drawer.
Exactly.
That's not big.
Of course
it's not
you
a
do.
Big thing. It's not huge.
So,
okay.
So here's the thing.
Okay.
So
talk to me.
You know, the deal is that when you start talking about decluttering, and you do get pushback from people because they don't want to give up the yearbook from the eighth grade class. That's when I say to my clients, talk to mom and dad and find out really what the nature of the attachment to the object is. So what is the meaning behind the object? What's the story? Explore that with them, because then that will often help them to part with it, because it's not literally the object, the yearbook, but it's all the memories of eighth grade. And if they can sort of talk about the memories and the story behind it, it often will give them that impetus to get rid of the thing. So you want to help them to have to define a goal for decluttering. It helps if you have a goal. So it might be, do you want to downsize? Are you thinking about moving? Do you want to travel more and not have as much stuff? Do you want an easier environment to move around in? And you can take them through these questions, this exercise. I'll ask people, what's the likelihood that you'll use this thing again? And you can, in your mind, think about your yearbook when I ask you these questions. Can I make money from this? Would someone else benefit from having it? Is it so special I want a special person to have it? Will my life change in any way if I get rid of this? What is the absolute worst thing that could happen if I get rid of this? And if I needed it again in the future, could I get it again? So I think you can look at each thing and answer those questions and realize that for the most part, you really don't need that object and you're not going to need it again, and nothing terrible is going to happen if you get rid of it. So, but it can be overwhelming. And if you've gathered 58 years worth of stuff, there's a lot of stuff. And what happens is people get very overwhelmed because they think of their whole house and they say, oh my God, I can't even begin. So the deal is you gotta begin. And how do you do that? You start with one room and one area in that room. And you say to yourself, for 2 hours, I am going to work on this. So let's say it's the closet in the family room that has all these shelves and is cluttered with stuff. You are going to put yourself there at that closet. You're going to set a timer. You're going to work for 2 hours without stopping. And you're going to go through and you're going to declutter that closet. And the reason why is because you're going to get a good feedback in the end, because if you stick with it for a couple hours, you'll get a lot done. And what you want to do is you want to look at each object and you want to divide it into five groups. So the first group is keep. The second group is giveaway. The third group is garage sale potential or selling it potential. Four is a charitable donation. And five is throwaway right now. And you hope, I hope anyway, that when I'm working with someone, that the throwaway pile is the biggest pile and that the keep pile is the smallest pile. But I make them put it into five piles. And if you noticed, the one pile I do not allow is hold or, you know, think about later. Because what happens is everybody puts it in that pile and then they just got to go through it again. So we don't allow holds. You have to make a decision right then and there of what you're going to do with those things. And it really works. If you take a small section and you work on it for a couple hours and you put everything into your five piles, you'll see that you can really make a dent in all of the stuff.
Yeah, but I can hear the response right now. But see, I'm still young enough. I could be president, and I'll need this for my presidential library.
Oh, of the eighth grade? You're going to be president in high school?
No, 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 president.
Well, then, you know what, Richard? Then keep it, because if you have a reason that's good, then you get to keep it.
No, I was thinking president of the United States.
Oh, I see. And you were going to use that, you know, yearbook. Maybe you could call back some of the kids and ask them to vote for you.
There
you might need it for research purposes.
If I think that'll help, yeah.
Exactly.
But it is a good series of questions to ask yourself. And certainly, there's no money I could be making from this, you know, as far as that's concerned. And, of course, there is another option, too. And I think you touched upon it as well. You could digitize it. You know, you don't necessarily have to have the physical thing, because you can put it on a disk, or you can put it in the cloud, you know, and maybe, you know, do that and maybe make it available to the rest of the world. And then maybe you could make money by charging 99 cents to view it.
There you go. And that's it. That's what I'll tell people when they have a collection of something. Take a picture of it. You know, dad's old tools or mom's cups and saucers. Do you need 30 sets of mom's cups and saucers? No. Take a really nice picture with a good camera and then make a digital book and give everyone in the family who might want to keep it that book with the picture of the collections, but you don't need the actual collection.
Yeah.
And you're right. Go through all the old photos that, you know, you've got boxes and boxes and boxes in the basement. They're going to be no good. They're going to fade anyway. There's companies now that you can actually send your pictures to, or your old, you know, 8-track videos to, and 8-track cassettes and all that stuff. You can send them all away, and they will put them on a disc for you that you can look at on the computer, and it saves, you know, it frees up all of that space.
Absolutely. I know I have to go through that process with boxes. I don't know how many there are, maybe 6, 8, maybe 10 file boxes filled with reel-to-reels that I've collected over the years. And, of course, they're just taking up space, and I have the machine to do it, to digitize it. I just haven't done it, you know. So now it's the question of sitting down and making the commitment to doing it, or going back to one of the things you've suggested, find someone who would be willing to do it for a fair price so that it can be done and you can then get rid of that stuff.
Yep.
You know. Yeah. Because the other thing too is, especially here in California, with what we've been dealing with, and we're not exclusive to it because it's been the whole western part of the United States, these wildfires that keep cropping up every few days, it seems like. And you never know if it's your turn or not. And how are you going to protect all of that stuff? Now, pictures, digitizing is excellent. Audio, digitizing is excellent. Grandma's 30 coffee cups, not so much. But you can get new coffee cups and always have the memories maybe of friends and family coming over and using those cups and so forth. But there are all kinds of different ways. I know that one of the things that we're doing right now is we're going through our clothing. We have a bedroom that has become a closet. There's no bed in there. It's two dressers, an armoire, a table covered with clothing, and then an actual closet. And then I put a hanger rod mounted on the wall outside the closet that my wife has some of her clothes hanging on. And we're going through that room a little at a time. We're not trying to do it all in one day. And that's also very important to remember, too, is that that you don't have to do it all at once. And a lot of people, they feel as though, well, there's an urgency to it. Well, maybe in a sense there is, but not really, because you've had it this long. You've had it this long, you know.
Right. Well, that's why I say, instead of that, make little time fragments that you can handle, but that you'll be successful. So let's say you say, we're going to do this rack of clothes. That's all. We're just going to stay here and do this rack until it's done.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, getting rid of clothing, like I say to people, if you haven't worn it in a year, maybe even two, I'll give you two,
mm-hmm.
then the odds are you're really not going to wear it. There are a lot of the theater companies, if you have any period-looking clothing, they love to take that.
Yes.
And, of course, the shelters are in desperate need of clothing. So there's so many ways to donate clothing. That
awesome.
Can be helpful for
awesome.
Other people.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I hadn't even... I mean, we're going to be giving clothes primarily to a local thrift store, Alpha Thrift Store, here in Santa Barbara. Actually, it's in Goleta, California, to the west of us. Because, you know, we don't want to just throw them in the landfill. They're still perfect. She hasn't worn them in a long, long time, but she's had them for a long, long time and is finally going through and saying, hey, we need to declutter. Because we have some plans for the future that would require us to have less stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just need to do that. And I've got boxes, these large plastic containers that you can buy like at the hardware store, filled with books, you know. And, of course, books that I've collected. I mean, like yours, I have Age in Place right in front of me, and it's probably going to go up on the shelf in my studio. But then eventually it'll probably move into one of these boxes.
Yeah, and books are hard. Books are a little bit harder. We have some, when I do speaking around here locally and talk about decluttering and organizing, I've come up with a list of places that will actually take books. So wherever people are listening from, they would have to do that research just to find out if there are places that will take. A lot of the nursing homes and assisted living communities have libraries in them. And so often they are looking for, you know, all the novels that you read and you felt like, I can't throw it away because it's a hardcover book. They'll take those. And so that's a nice place to think about giving books.
Well, and I did this before we moved from Phoenix 11 years ago. I went through all of the books I had at that time, and I got rid of a whole bunch of them. They were, of course, used, but still in excellent condition because they came from, for example, the publisher, the PR firm that was promoting the guests such as yourself that I had on the programs that I was doing back in Phoenix. And I was actually able to sell them. Maybe for a buck or two, but collectively I must have had hundreds of books. So I was actually able to walk away with some cash. And now these books are in circulation for other people to read.
Exactly. That's a great idea.
And libraries, they may take them. And you, as you just said, nursing homes, maybe a school in your neighborhood, high school maybe, depending
mm-hmm.
upon the content of your material, your books. Maybe a grade school, but they're just all kinds of resources rather than putting them in the dumpster, even if it goes into recycle. You know, my gosh, those are still worthy of being read by other people. And, you know, I think that those are excellent ideas. And the same, I would venture the same thing would go with a lot of stuff in your kitchen, kitchen utensils and pots and pans and dishes and so forth. You could find places that could utilize them. Again, what about, would that be something that, say, a homeless shelter would be worthy of, or thrift stores maybe?
Oh, definitely. And people who are, you know, setting up some of the shelters that they are then trying to set up people in their own homes.
In their own homes, yes.
Those people definitely are in need of pots and pans and blankets and towels and utensils and that kind of thing.
See, folks, I told you we were going to turn this thing positive.
There you go. It is. The whole thing is very positive, Richard.
I mean, my father, bless his heart, he has always had some wonderful wise sayings, not quite to the level of Ben Franklin per se, but they were meaningful to me. And one of the two of them were combined, eat, drink, and be merry in moderation. Because, and then the second one goes along with that one, because nobody gets out of this world alive. And so if we can collect, if you will, and then declutter in moderation. I love the idea of having for, and this was the theory as far as clothing was concerned, but this would apply to pretty much any other thing you're trying to remove from the home, you know, declutter from. You have a pile of those things that you're going to keep, a pile of those things you're going to throw away into the landfill, and a pile you're going to give away.
Mm-hmm.
And with social media the way it is today, too, there's another option. I've been on Facebook, and they have a section where people are selling all kinds of stuff.
Exactly. Everybody, they have a local Facebook for your neighborhood, kind of. Like,
yeah.
They can tell where you are. And yes, sure.
Yeah.
And garage sale. I mean, it's a big job to even organize a garage sale. That's a whole other story.
Yeah, I've done a few of those, but yeah.
You know, it can be done. And, of course, the charitable donations. So there's lots of places that, you know,
exactly.
can use your stuff.
Yeah. It's not insurmountable. You just have to start. That's the real key.
Exactly.
I mean, there's so much more that we could talk about. I actually wanted to jump into one area before we do close out the program. And just a reminder to our listeners, Age in Place is the title of the book. It's a guide to modifying, organizing, and decluttering mom and dad's home. And Linda Schrager, that's Linda with a Y, folks, L-Y-N-D-A, Linda Schrager, who is the author of this particular book, which includes basically a guided walking tour, starting with the home's exterior through its entryways and into all of the living areas. And it goes through a lot of other things, some checklists, photographs of modifications from a patient's homes. And, I mean, just all kinds of great stuff in here. It's to help keep them safe, mom and dad, and keep you sane, which is very, very important as well. Our sanity for all of us, keeping your folks sane too, you know, so that they don't feel like they're being put upon, you know, by outsiders, even if it is their children, and B, so that they don't feel that they're being put on, so to speak, by other people who may try to take advantage of them. And so now is the time to do it. If you're heading in that direction, this is a good book for you because you, you're going to need to know how to do some of this stuff. And this process, you can make it very easy by, again, starting now and just doing a little at a time. Let me ask about the aspect of the psychological and even the spiritual ramifications of all of this for those who are receiving the caregiving. But let's also deal in the second part of this question with those who are giving the care. Where's the support? How do we go about getting that support? Because the first rule of survival training is take care of number one. Because if you don't take care of you, you can't help anybody else.
Exactly. Well, you know, I was just asked to do a big story. I'm starting to do the research now. But when people look at stress, one of the biggest stressors is caregiver stress. And so you're absolutely right that, you know, I talk about care for the caregiver, and the caregiver needs to be sure that they are not burning out, that they are physically okay. Often someone who's doing a lot of caregiving will put the person they're caring for first and not take care of their own self. So they might have aches or pains or issues and not deal with it, or say, I don't even have time to go to the doctor because I'm, you know, taking care of mom. So, but then you get sick and then you can't take care of mom anymore. So certainly physically and mentally and spiritually, it's very important for caregivers to get the support that they need, because they can't be good at it if they don't have help themselves. So, you know, you're absolutely right. It's a process, and the person who's receiving the care also, you know, needs to be a little bit open to it. I've seen, you know, parents where they're like you said earlier, I don't need your help. I don't want your help. And, you know, I think one of the hardest things to do we can, as the kids, offer as much as we can do. But in the end, it is mom and dad's choice to refuse that care if they want to. In the end, they get to make the decision. If they're walking around this house and we think it's cluttered, or if we think, the shower's not safe, or this, that, or the other thing, we can give them all the suggestions possible. We can give it out of our heart and our love for them. But in the end, if they choose, and of course that's assuming they're cognitively intact, if they choose to not take our help or our suggestions or our care, that's up to them. You can only do what you can do. And we all have to be able to say, you know what, I tried, I offered, and now it's up to them. They can choose what they want to choose.
And that's a very important thing to keep in mind as the child
right.
of the parents.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is, hey, you know, it's their life, you know. I have to say, one of my favorite lines from a comedian in one of the TV shows that he did was when he was talking with his kids, and of course he was doing the disciplining at the time, he says, look, I brought you into this world and I can take out. Well, the elderly can't exactly do that in that respect, but the theory is the same. Is like, look, you know, if I want your help, I'll ask for it. And so it's really important, the presentation. It's really important how you address this subject with your parents. And hopefully most of the folks are open to listening to and receiving. And to that end, one of the wonderful universal laws is that if there is going to be a receiver, there has to be a giver. And if there's going to be a giver, there has to be a receiver. You can't, it's not a one-way street. And so we have to sort of humble ourselves sometimes. Those who have, you know, really strong, prideful backgrounds, you know, doing for self. And that's a wonderful thing. But, you know, we're not here alone. I mean, I've often said that, you know, if the good Lord had intended for all of us to live solitary lives, there are certainly in the universe so enough planets for each one of us to have our own. But what's the reality? We're all here. We're all here. So that tells me that we're supposed to work together. So try to, you know, I don't know about swallowing the pride necessarily, but, you know, back off a little bit and say, hey, this is my kid. And my kid actually wants to help me. That's pretty cool that I trained my. See, that would be another way for the adults, you know, who are in this phase to look at it. My kid wants to help me. I must have done a hell of a good job training this kid, raising this kid, that he has that he or she has that much compassion and love for me that they want to step in and do this. And that to me is that says an awful lot.
Exactly.
That really does.
That sums it up.
Yeah. Well, Linda Schrager, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program. This has been a great pleasure, and I certainly hope that we do get a chance to maybe meet you in person, preferably not walker to walker.
Preferably not.
Yes.
Then I better hurry up, Richard. That's all I can say.
Well, yeah, you and me both. You and me both. But I want to remind our listeners of Age in Place. It's a guide to modifying, organizing, and decluttering mom and dad's home. Linda Schrager's been my guest. And let's give out that website once again so that people can get more information about you, maybe even order the book through Amazon or whatever other source that they would choose to do so, but also get in touch with you, and maybe you can offer them some additional suggestions on maybe their specific situation. What is that website?
Definitely. That would be my pleasure. My website is otherwisehealthy.com.
All right. Otherwisehealthy.com. We will be linked to that website, and we encourage you to go there. And before we let you go, three final questions. And again, thank you so much for taking so much time on the program. The first question is, who is Linda Schrager?
How much time did you say you had?
You got 5-10 minutes.
No, Linda Schrager is someone who has worked with elderly patients and clients my whole life. I started out as an occupational therapist many years ago, and I chose to work with this population from the day one, and I have loved them from the day one because I felt that I would learn so much from them. So I am an occupational therapist, and then I became a social worker because I wanted further training, but that too was in the field of geriatrics. And then I became a certified aging in place specialist, which means that I know how to go into a home and look at it and assess it for problems and make suggestions. So I am all those things. I am the mother of two beautiful daughters and the wife of an amazing husband, and now a newborn mother of a puppy, which I think I'm out of my mind, and a 12-year-old golden doodle.
Yes, well, I think that's a wonderful thing. Next question for you is, what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I hope to help people to live a happy, safe life in the manner to which they want. I work with people when they're in their later stages of life, and some say that that could be depressing, but for me it's always been happy, because I feel like if in the end people can do great things and live a happy life, what more could you ask for? So that is what I hope to achieve, to keep people safe, to prevent them from falling, and to help them to enjoy aspects of their life.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
Gee, you don't ask easy questions, do you? Well, I guess my life's purpose is to, it's always been to help others. I love doing a lot of public speaking. I love being out with people and educating them about maybe different ways to do things so that it might be a little easier for them. So my purpose, I guess, is to help other people.
Linda Schrager, thank you so much for joining us here on the program. It's been a great pleasure to chat with you, and I'm going to begin the process of putting more of this into place in my life, especially the decluttering part, and I'm going to have to either hire someone to do the digitizing of my reel-to-reels, in spite of the fact that I know how to do it. It's like, I've got the skills, but I'm not sure that I have the time, and it may just be worth the money to just get it done, because I would love to go back and listen to some of the stuff that I did years ago, and it would be a lot of fun even maybe to archive them up on the website. That would be kind of an interesting thing, too.
Exactly, yeah, that everybody can listen to.
Absolutely. Well, again, thank you so much for joining us here on the program. We greatly appreciate it. And I want to remind our listeners that if you'd like to help in support of this program, we are open to it. We'd love it. And if you're just sending us great energy, hey, we love that too. We're looking for any and all support that we can get for this broadcast. And we look to be around for a long, long time to come. If you'd like to support us in a financial way, go to richarddugan.com/mission and scroll down to the bottom of the page. There is a PayPal link, and you can support us in that fashion, and we are gratefully appreciative. My thanks again to my guest, Linda Schrager, and again, the book is entitled Age in Place. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.